This is Cultural Baggage, your unvarnished drug war news. I'm Dean Becker, your host, along with tonight's producer, Stacy, at the controls. Quoting the great Jerry Garcia, what a long, strange trip it's been. Folks, the drug war is over. The prohibitionists, though still bayoneting the wounded, are out of ammunition. The day you say the war is over, it's over. But what we have in place of truth and reality is rather an 88-year-old history of hysteria. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Thank God for the enlightened Brits and Europeans, the Canadians and Australians, else this drug war would have swallowed us alive. Who needs to communicate and what should be said? You need to communicate to your elected officials, to the Chronicle and to the Austin American Statesman, to ABC, CBS, NBC and Fox, and perhaps more importantly, you need to get it straight with your parents, your kids and your cohorts. It's time to end this drug war. The drug war is a failure. It has been and always will be a failure. We all know that. Diffused responsibility. The ability to view a car wreck and tell yourself that somebody will surely stop to help, but I am afraid or in a hurry or just confused and will not help. The drug war is a perpetual car wreck, a government-mandated daily stampede over the cliff of thousands of our young people. Because of the recognition and success of drug harm reduction efforts in countries outside the U.S., our media has begun to recognize and publish some of the truth about the drug war and to expose the bias and outrageous deceptions of the U.S. drug warriors. All that is lacking, the only change that must occur to end the unnecessary harms of the drug war is you. Please get a pen and paper. Later I'll give you some links that will make it easy for you to write the media and your elected officials. Now comes this sad note from Jody James, which grieves my heart. Eddie Smith, a patient, advocate, friend to many, and a warrior without par, passed at the hospital in Kentucky last night at 8:30 p.m. For many years, Eddie has led the fight for medical access for patients in Kentucky and given generously of his time on other projects. Some may recall Eddie's participation in Journey for Justice 3 in Florida and Journey for Justice 4 Texas style during 2000. His work in Florida or on the Florida Reform 2000 conference and his work with various reform groups and again his help after the murders at Rainbow Farm in Michigan. Here's a poem about Eddie Smith and the other drug warriors who have passed on before the death of the monster called drug prohibition. My friend Eddie Smith has crossed over, leaving something too achingly familiar, too heartbreakingly sad. I wish the world could realize what important links they have in their struggle for personal freedom and peace while they are here. Great spirits, great warriors come our way too seldom for us to ignore their dignity and strength and courage. And yes, what courage? Although I'm supposed to be, promised to be, I'm never there to see death steal into the room. Does God not think me strong enough? Major, my son left when I was just minutes away. He was a boy with the spirit of a man. He defended the meek, protected the old, and his compassionate spirit lit up my own. Then there was Joe Hart, friend and housemate for 2 years, fellow warrior for many. I watched daily as he fought disease, growing ever weaker, but never less strong. And he quit being as I stood in front of a prison the first time I left home. But I grow to love these warriors through their pain. Then suddenly I look up and I'm alone again. I know you had to go to get out of the pain, and I know I'll feel your spirit again, but I will miss your quick and oh-so-frequent laughter. Eddie, Eddie, it was music to my soul. Signed, your friend and admirer, Kay Lee. We'll all miss you, Eddie.
Do you think that marijuana laws need changing? We do. We're Houston Normal, the Houston chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. We are your neighbors and friends who support reforming the laws concerning medical, industrial, and responsible recreational use of marijuana. If you would like to help us change these laws for the better, give us a call, 281-752-9198, or on the web at norml.org and choose Find Your Local Chapter. We have monthly meetings on the third Thursday of each month, as well as various events throughout the year. Once again, our number is 281-752-9198. Be sure to call or write your elected officials and tell them it's time for a change. Houston, are you normal? I am. Houston Normal is a nonprofit organization that does not advocate the breaking of any laws, only the reform of unjust marijuana laws.
In just a few moments, we will begin our visits with three different guests tonight. First off, I want you to know that we have in the studio Dr. G. Allen Robinson, the Distinguished Professor of Pharmacology at the UT Health Science Center, who is also the Executive Director of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. Hopefully in a few minutes, we'll bring in Dr. David Duncan, President of Duncan and Associates, and a Clinical Associate Professor at the School of Medicine at Brown University. And last but not least, we will bring in a guest whose existence flies in the face of all DEA logic, a man who receives 300 joints per month from the U.S. government, Mr. George McMahon. We're going to discuss the harms of the drug war, and we want you to call it with your questions. But first up, more news. Raising awareness of the consequences of drug prohibition is the creed of DRCNet, who is responsible for rounding up the news contained in the rest of this report. You can easily access this wonderful summary on the web. Just go to www.drcnet.org. Insofar as the outrageous drug laws go, they are going all right. They're going away. The Nevada initiative that would remove all criminal penalties for the possession of up to 3 ounces of marijuana hit the national spotlight last weekend as Nevada police organizations flip-flopped on endorsing the measure. It also led in short order to a rebellion in the NCOPS ranks, the police organization, followed by the forced resignation of their head, Andy Anderson, and a withdrawal of their endorsement. In 1 week, Nevada police have gone from RoboCop to Keystone Cops. Storm clouds over Ohio. When the campaign for new drug policies managed to win a series of drug reform initiatives in the western U.S., that was one thing. But now, with Ohio's campaign to bring treatment, not jail, the opposition is mounting a strong counterattack. Ohio Governor Bob Taft and First Lady Hope Taft led early and likely illegal efforts to derail the Ohio initiative. Michigan governor flails and fails in an anti-initiative move. While Ohio officials have taken strong preemptive stand in an effort to defeat the state's treatment not jail initiative, a similar effort in Michigan is now beginning to draw serious attention from unhappy elected officials. On July 25th, Michigan Governor Engler announced that he had vetoed $845 million in revenue sharing payments to Michigan cities and localities because of fears that ballot initiatives would break the bank. In Washington, D.C., the Treatment Not Jail initiative makes the November ballot, an initiative that would allow some first- and second-time drug offenders to opt for treatment in lieu of jail or prison sentences will go before District of Columbia voters this November. Arizona is to vote on marijuana decriminalization. The Arizona Secretary of State's office announced Monday that an initiative that would decriminalize the possession of marijuana had submitted sufficient signatures to make the November ballot. This measure would, among other things, decriminalize the possession of up to 2 ounces of marijuana, two marijuana plants, and marijuana-related paraphernalia, and it would require the Department of Public Safety to provide up to 2 ounces of marijuana free to any qualified medical marijuana patient. In Afghanistan, the heroin labs are reappearing, and yet one more indication that the Afghan opium trade is in the midst of a full-scale revival. Newly set up labs in eastern Afghanistan are producing hundreds of kilograms of heroin per week. In Canada, a judge rips the DEA law violations. The DEA may be accustomed to trampling both the letter and the spirit of the law in America, but a Canadian court has just slapped it down for trying to pull the same sort of stunt north of the border. The DEA's illegal conduct is extremely offensive because of the violation of Canadian sovereignty without explanation or apology. This was written by the British Columbian Supreme Court Justice Janice Dillon. New Jersey bans devices that defeat drug tests. What are you in for, kid? Asked the hardened con. Possession of a Wizinator, sir, comes the reply. Well, even the Wizinator, a fake penis with temperature controls, or any of its devious competitors can get you 18 months and a $10,000 fine. And if you're on probation in New Jersey or parole, the penalty jumps to 3 to 5 years and a $15,000 fine. I suppose that next they'll want to hold it for you. That's the news for tonight. I again ask that you visit drcnet.org. There you can learn the truth about this drug war and get help in letter writing and how to email and get the physical addresses of your elected officials. Stacy has a question for the listeners.
Yeah, I had a rumor. I heard a rumor that there were billboards in and around town that said on them, "You think it's dry now, just wait." And I wanted to hear from anybody in the listening audience that's seen these billboards. I haven't seen them myself, and I just sort of wanted some verification as to whether or not they're there. I heard this is a rumor in Pasadena. Give us a call at 713-526-KPFT. I'll answer the phone personally myself. Might not be able to put you on the air. But I'd like to hear some verbal verification as to whether or not you've seen it and where you've seen it. So give us a call. 713-526-KPFT. Thank you. That's the question I had.
Thank you, Stacy. Okay, I'm proud to welcome to the studio the distinguished professor of pharmacology at the UT Health Science Center and the executive director of the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, the best dang drug reform outfit in the world, Dr. Al Robison.
Hi, Dean. It's good to be here.
Yes, Al, I know you were perhaps the first to determine that there is no lethal dose of marijuana. Could you give a brief explanation of that discovery?
Well, Dean, that was way back when, that was back in the 60s.
We're doing good.
Yeah, okay. That was back in the 60s, just shortly after THC had been synthesized.
Mm-hmm.
And back in those days, the federal government actually was interested in knowing what this stuff did. So we pretty much had a lifetime supply of this pure stuff. Which is an oily liquid in its pure state, as you probably know. And, the first thing that any pharmacologist does when you get a new toy like that that's never been studied in the lab, you try to identify its toxicity, which you do by calculating the LD50, the lethal dose 50, the dose that will kill 50% of a population of animals. Usually use highly inbred mice, laboratory mice, sometimes rats, but experimental animal of one sort or another. You can usually extrapolate from there to humans. In any event, to make the long story short, we were unable to calculate an LD50 for this new substance, tetrahydrocannabinol, because no matter how much of it we injected into a mouse, we couldn't kill it. So there is no toxicity.
Well, I'm sure it might have knocked a couple of them silly with the doses you were giving them, I guess. But.
Maybe, but you inject that much volume of anything, olive oil or not, it would probably make them pretty sick.
Yes, sir.
They wouldn't die, though.
Okay, that flies totally in the face of Mr. Hutchison's statement that it's so harmful that you cannot kill somebody. But as a director of DPFT, do you see some areas where we in Texas can make progress this year in changing or at least altering some of the drug laws?
Well, Dean, we are hoping that next year in the Texas legislature is in session, we're hoping we'll get at least three measures passed. One would be a sentence reduction bill,
mm-hmm.
that would, basically, from the standpoint of marijuana, it would change possession of small amounts of marijuana from a B misdemeanor to a C, which would basically be not arrestable and not punishable by jail. Let me put it that way. You'd have to pay a fine.
Right.
So-called decriminalization. We didn't decriminalization at all, but sentence reduction.
Right.
And we think we can sell that because it would save the state a lot of money. We're going to be short of some $5 billion, as I recall the latest figures. And the state, as you well know, is anxious to avoid going to a state income tax, and this would help them do it. So if that's what it takes to get a half reasonable reform measure through, we'll do it. The other two things would, of course, be a medical marijuana bill so that patients who actually need it and are using it under the supervision of a physician could have it for no penalty whatsoever.
And, well, as it should be, yes.
And the third thing would be a bill that would somehow or other allow needle exchange programs, at least in big cities. In other words, you might have to have a local option to the Texas Paraphernalia Act. Texas Paraphernalia Act.
Yes, sir. I understand that, the I don't know. There's a lot of excitement going on up in Tulia, actually in New York City as well, even here in Houston. Bob Herbert up there has written, I think, 5 consecutive columns about the situation in Tulia.
Wonderful columns in the New York Times.
Yes.
Okay, so what was your question?
Well, I was just wondering, what you might have heard or what's your take on that situation. Are we going to get any justice from the Justice Department?
Well, Dean, you know exactly as much about it as I do because we all read Tom Marshall's column in this morning's Houston Chronicle. And apparently some 6 months ago, the Justice Department let it out that the investigation into Tulia, the civil rights violations, was over and done, and it's a closed case, and
no report was issued.
But stimulated by Bob Herbert's columns, which he called attention to this horror, there's still 14 people serving long sentences in prison.
Wasn't it up to 300 years in one case?
In one case, I think it was. I mean, it's just insane. And it's just awful. And I guess I'm sort of working on the assumption people in the listening area saw Tom Marshall's column. If not, they need to go and read it because he does a wonderful job of summarizing the situation in a short space of time. But there's just no evidence at all.
No, and
there's a guy serving 300 years in prison. And there really is literally no evidence.
Well, even the morning they callously arrested these people, dragged them out into the street in their underwear, paraded them before the cameras, demonized them before there was ever any mention of an indictment, let alone a trial. And
it's just crude, old-fashioned racism. It's just awful. It's like something out of Mississippi in the 60s or 50s.
It's so true. They... And that morning, as I recall, they found no guns, no drugs, and not much money to speak of in any of these homes. Hardly sounds like drug dealers to me.
Imagine a little town of 5,000 people, and how many of them? There was 43
yes.
people, almost all black.
Or married to black
people. A couple of white people who had relations with black people. And 14 drug dealers in a town of 5,000 people selling cocaine.
Right. It doesn't make sense.
And, it obviously doesn't make sense. It was set up. I'm sure that most poor people, and these people were poor as church mice, they can sometimes afford a little bit of crack, to smoke, but they usually don't have enough money for cocaine, and so I suspect what was happening was the cops just planted the cocaine. And
well, it was.
If nowadays, in view of the scandal that's taken place in Dallas, you don't even know if it was cocaine. Could be gypsum or sheetrock.
Yeah, it's a scary situation when they can create crimes out of thin air if they want to, and make them stick for 300 years.
I mean, that has always been one of the principal unintended consequences of prohibition, is it just corrupts everybody.
Yes, sir.
The cops and the people that, undercover people that report to the cops, it's just a money-making machine.
Well, now, you heard my rally call to get people to write those letters and to send them to the media, to send them to their congressmen, etc. I head up to Houston Normal, you head up to Houston DPFT. We need members. We need people to get on board and help with this effort. Am I right?
We do, Dean. That's really is basically all we need. There's just so few of us. And it's quite depressing to realize that all the polls now, including the latest poll in Texas, show that a large majority are in favor of letting patients have marijuana if they need it. And there's always a minority who are in favor of legalizing it for people like you and I to smoke if we feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
But a very clear majority now are clearly saying that whatever the penalty is, we don't want it legalized, But we don't want people sent to jail for smoking this stuff.
Right.
So there's just no... Well, it's just hard to understand why we have the... It's always been hard to understand why we have the crazy laws we have.
Well, I think that little intro piece where it actually has that quote from you, it is fundamentally un-American. This is outrageous what goes on. As I said, this drug war is over when you stand up out there, listeners, when you do something, when you let these elected officials and the media know that it's not going to happen anymore, not in your name. And it doesn't take any skin off your back. It takes 5 minutes of your time. Please help. I don't know that we're able to reach David Duncan at this time. We'll try again here in a little bit. I wanted to let the listeners know that we do want you to call in, ask us some questions. But we do have, they're telling me we have Mr. George McMahon on line 6. Can you hear us, George?
Hello.
Hey, George. How you doing tonight?
Hi, Dean. I'm doing pretty good tonight.
Yeah, we were unable to reach David Duncan, so we came to you a little bit earlier. Would you tell the people that don't know who George McMahon is, a bit of your history and why you're our guest?
Well, I'm the fifth person in the United States to receive one of those federal exemptions. It's actually an IND investigation on new drug protocol. And I was here to tell you about a little bit of the medical evidence that's bringing about these high polls that now Dr. Robison was just talking about.
Yes.
They are fantastic. They're 63%, 75%, 81%. You name the state. The polls that have been taken, and not by the so-called acquirer, not by me or you or the big organizations, but actually done by the media and the news organizations. And they're getting these terrific polls, and the politics themselves getting these terrific polls back that are saying the people are simply fed up with, as Dr. Robinson mentioned, putting people in prison, but they're extremely irate about not letting sick people have a medicine. That seems to be probably utmost in their mind. Of the majority, I mean, y'all, you have to include in almost all of those, it seems, that part about being upset with putting people in prison for something that
mundane.
Simple.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to tell you about the latest medical conferences. I mean, we have scientists from all over the world. We have government officials. Did you hear that?
Yes.
We have government officials. We have the people that our government quotes saying that their studies did not say what they said. Recently, 2 years ago, Dr. Paskin came aboard and testified as to his findings with cancer findings. And he said, well, they just said I said it caused cancer. I never said that at all. He said, well, finally, the only comparison I could make was if people that had certain throat cancers might be pot smokers. That's all I could do.
Right.
That's as close to line as we're drawing. Not that it causes you to have cancer and you'll die.
Well, did NIDA jump on that and then make use of it as a quote as indicating that it does cause cancer?
Right. Their suggestion was that it does cause cancer, and that it's because of this fellow's studies. And M is the big name that we hear a lot. I should put it that way. There's a lot of other studies involved now that they're trying to do. But again, over and over and over, I've had those very people in front of me telling me that that's not true. That's not what they said. Dr. Abrams, who just finished the much waited for AIDS study in San Francisco, remember? And there was a lot of talk about this study and the patients getting their marijuana. And all when it was over, the government said, yeah, but you know what? It didn't do anything. Didn't help the AIDS patients. Well, Dr. Abrams laughed when he said that. He said, no, what it didn't do was directly influence their health, their CDCs or et cetera accounts. Yes, they came up, but they came up because the people were eating.
Right, becoming more healthy, yes.
Right, they were getting more healthy. So they got more healthy because they smoked marijuana, but the government didn't see how it worked. They couldn't understand that it was not technical, it's just nature.
Just nature, yes.
Right, and so some of these, many of the results, Dr. Fried, who's You're hearing a lot recently, I believe, on Dr. Meshulam and Dr. Mida, I can't even pronounce his last name, the Israeli investigators.
Yes.
Dr. Fried, Esther Fried, was one of the doctors at the last conference. This was in Portland, Oregon, in May 2nd through the 5th. And she made it a point in her opening remarks to say that, animals that didn't get CBD1 at birth and who weren't born with it, who actually didn't get it from their mother's milk,
right,
tended to starve to death, to die.
Because of that lack of health, that forward momentum of nature, that, as you just spoke of.
Right. That actual chemical that comes naturally to it is in your body is also one of the ones that we're subtracting from this marijuana use. Now, she extrapolated. She said, our experiments have shown us that because they've done the, and I don't know the bald mice name or, you know, I'm not a scientist guy. I'm a ditch digger. And so I'm going to slap
me, boss.
I'm going to just jump right by the scientific names and say that they have a, for instance, breed of mouse that they use for drug testing when comparing to human, at least a start for a human test. And because they apparently act, their bodies act, react to, so much like, Al, please jump in here and tell me how wrong I am.
You're doing good, Jack.
Okay. But the mouse gives very much the results a human would give if at birth you were able to see like you can in the mouse. So they extracted the CBD1 receptor. They didn't extract it, they blocked it. CBD1 is one of those chemicals that we use in marijuana. We know we use. There's quite a few, and a lot of them have been separated and are already medicines, but a lot of them in their natural mix aren't. So anyway, CBD1 is one of the important ones. And one of the things that it did was when you took that away, those mice starved to death in 5 weeks. They were most likely of three groups not to have any milk in their stomach at all. The mice that were treated with extra CBD1 turned out, guess what? Full tummies all the time. The ones that were left to naturally succeed were more likely to be full than the non, or than the mice with the antagonist. But yet not as likely to be full of milk as the ones who had this little additive. Now that's in your mother's milk. That's in humans' mother's milk as well. And she extrapolated to go on to say she thought maybe people that didn't get that were probably imbalanced, very imbalanced, that their whole nature would be to get more, not literally, I can't use the word she used again, I'm not a scientist, but that it fit.
Well, George, I know you used smoke perhaps 8 or 10 joints per day that the government sends you, and because you've lived this well and you're trying to prosper best you can, I was wondering if you could tell my audience about the regimen of opiates and other debilitating drugs you used to have to take and how marijuana makes your life more livable.
Oh, my God, I can say this about that. I was on the cutting edge of drug relief from birth. Soon after birth, they decided I was, I must have the croup or some other thing that was, not allowing me to eat enough. My arms were not big and, you know, healthy looking. Yet I yelled real loud. And so by one, I was drinking, they were giving me beer. Opiates didn't start until I was about 3 years old. And from, that was 1953. I mean, can you imagine? They had just barely started using penicillin regularly by then.
Well, the polio vaccines were coming around then.
Oh, right. I mean, I can remember the big deal about the polio vaccines. And, of course, by then they were saying they were going to end chickenpox, but we all had to get the pox vaccine. And, so all of these new drugs were getting invented. And man, I really literally can't tell you the names of all the things that I got. I'm not sure because I would be in university hospitals and places where I would get experimental drugs. Exactly what I got, I couldn't even begin to tell you anymore. I was just looking through some of the lists. I had TB, the the chemo for TB. I had 18 months of that on top of all these. At the time I did that, I think I was taking about 13 or 14 other drugs, things to make my stomach work, then things to make my bowels work, then things to make both not work too much, and then things to make those, to make all those things not work, which is what I was taking in the first place, things for pain.
Well, then, thanks to a simple little medicine that grows just about anywhere, you're able to circumvent just about all of those now, right,
George? All of them. I don't take any of them occasionally because I have some pretty bad staph infections that I've picked up in the hospitals over years. I occasionally have to take one antibiotic, and even it's still controversial, and I don't even think, well, let me see. Well, I have to look for the name of it right now. And I only take it once, maybe once or twice a year. One pill, maybe three pills at most.
I hear you. We're going to take a little break now. We're going to come back and take your calls. Please call us here at 713-526-5738.
The war that they wage on drugs, that they wage on marijuana, as a consequence, the most beautiful flower of our bouquet of rights has been destroyed by law enforcement.
Okay, I just wanted to say that we do have a caller online. I invite the rest of you to please call in. Number here is 713-526-5738. Clayton, you're on the air.
Hey, Dean, this is Clay. I just got back from Oakland.
Oh, yeah, you took the trip to the West Coast.
I just got inspired, man.
I hear you. It'll inspire you out there. That's right. Ty, tell us about it. What did you learn out there, Clayton?
And we get some people on the front lines. The big people out there have all been going down. The feds have been chopping them down, like going crazy out there. They don't want the movement to keep going, but it's getting too big. It's all over the place. There's about 5-6 new sidewalk cafes opening up in Oakland in the theater district alone. There's one that services the Chinese people out there. There's one that they had one in California that's actually gone bad. It's the only one, and they're all getting investigated like there's nobody's business. And they get rid of the bad apples real quick. They have strict rules. They follow them. These guys are out there putting their necks on the lines. They have hemp stores like you wouldn't believe that we can have in this country. Every weed smoker dreams of going to the Mecca of Sir Greenland. Holland, Amsterdam, we got one right here in this country. It's called Oakland.
Yes, we do, sir.
Clayton, did you go and visit Richard Lee's place, the Bulldog Cafe?
Yes, I did.
How's he doing out there?
Oh, man, he has built a business.
Yeah.
He moved into a very depressed, needed to be revitalized area. It's the old theater district. He's turned the place into a good business. He pays his people. They're on the payroll.
Yeah.
He pays taxes on what he earns on that place.
Gee whiz, imagine that. People who advocate smoking marijuana who are good citizens. My goodness.
Paying taxes.
We're all good citizens.
Yes.
It's just that we don't believe that our government has the right laws. Some of the laws were put there. Mainly, one of the big things was to break the ass of black people back in the 1930s.
Exactly right.
We got to stop this repression.
We do, George. I appreciate the report. Did you have a question for either Al or George?
No, I just wanted to make a statement saying that it's going to grow. It's going to go all over this nation, and they're not going to stop it. My prediction. And we're going to be next.
Well, George, everybody's going to be next. I think what they've done in California is say, you're going to bust us, then bust all of us, because we're going to do it. Everyone out there is growing. They're having growing classes, and community gardens.
We can do the same thing here.
I think you're right, George. We need you people out there to get involved, to contact Normal. Help us to make this progress. Contact Al at DPFT. Go ahead, George.
I'm sorry, that's Clayton Evil.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
It's good stuff.
Thank you. Clayton, I'm glad you made it back safe and sound, and thank you for the report.
Oh, Dad.
Well, we've got a second.
Okay, go ahead, George.
Yeah, I would like to tell Clayton, I guess I get to be the bell ringer tonight. Hey, you guys, I just got my letter about Zeal, and I want to say thank goodness, and I wish him the best of luck. Whatever way it comes out, I hope it's over quick. And the other thing is, it made it clear in there, and it is clear to me, there's a real dearth of two things. And one is the media is bought now. You can't approach it like we did. We did that, and they saw it, and they cut that off. And two, everybody does need money. You know what? Take your wallet out, take out the price of a joint, and send it to somebody you support. If it's DPF, if it's Normal, if it's Patients Out of Time, any of these people are fine. I mean, I can't even name them all. There's probably five or six that are known to everybody. And out of those five or six, pick the one you like and send them $5 or $50 or...
I hear you, George. It takes just some commitment. Time is actually more valuable to us than anything. If people could commit an hour, an afternoon, in helping some of these events to have more weight, it would certainly be great. But you're absolutely right. It looks like we do have Richard Lake online. Can you hear me?
All right, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, Richard. I'm doing well. It's good to hear from you.
I wanted to ask George if he'd tell us and the listening audience a little bit about the quality of the marijuana cigarettes he gets from the government. I've just been looking at a picture on a website. It's freedom2exhale.com/derbs, JPEG. It's a picture, and it's showing all the seeds and stems that supposedly came out of three of those cigarettes. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how it impacts on you?
Sure, I'd be glad to, Richard. There's part of the lie that the government would like you to eat. First of all, the marijuana is about average quality, but that does include, when I get it, it comes in rolled cigarettes. And they're rolled in a Pall Mall machine. One of the things that happens is that's a crimp machine, so you can't put buds through that. So the buds have to be removed. Of course, to keep an average, a decent marijuana, and they dry this stuff, they put it in 55-gallon barrels and dry it, and they freeze-dry it, so, I believe, just before they do that, so it's real dry. They take all of the leaf out, and they roll that up. Now, that doesn't mean they don't get bud material, but that's not their aim. But they come out with an average marijuana, so you don't have to buy your bag with your leaf in the bottom and the bud on top. You get about, the last I've been getting, I believe, is about 3.75 or 3.86% THC. That, of course, is of percent of a certain oil, not of the whole plant. But it's about an average Mexican sativa. When I get it, there's 300 of those cigarettes in a can. However, it's been freeze-dried down to below 10% of moisture. It's real dry, I've forgotten the numbers offhand now. I've got a chart somewhere that tells me exactly how dry it is, but it's very dry. Then they leave it like that for 3 years or 4 years. Like, I get it canned all the way back in 96. I've gotten some in 99, but I'm getting in 90 from 96 now. It's been froze like that. So when I get it, it's wrapped in this real thick paper with Yocasta glue. Not sure if you're familiar with rolling papers, but are you familiar with, for instance, Topps rolling papers?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. It's a similar glue to that. It's real thick. And it's of course, animal extract, horse hoof glue. That's pretty thick. Now I've got this thick paper, Pall Mall rolling cigarette paper. I've got that glue. And I've got this very, very dry material. Thank God government sent me a letter and said I should moisturize it. So I started taking this, because I tried moisturizing it in the paper, but you know what happens when you put wood, fiber, or material, vegetable material inside a paper and then try to moisturize it from the outside? You get wet paper.
Yeah.
So I took that out, threw the paper away, and said, okay, we'll put it in a pile here, and we'll put some water in it. Let's just see what that does. Well, lo and behold, I found out it worked.
Rehydrated it.
I rehydrated it, yeah. And all I did was just put some water on it, let it lay there for a day, you know, and it, by God, all of a sudden, so then I thought, well, I better clean it. You know, I got to mix it all up. So I started mixing it, and I started finding seeds and stems. The pictures are both right and wrong, because that was three cigarettes. That was what I took out of three cigarettes. The right part was, though not average, you know, I looked to see where I could see seeds and stems in the ends of the cigarettes before I picked it up. But I didn't just go through cigarettes. That was just three cigarettes after I looked at the can, the top of the can. The right part is I get stems that are as long as the paper, and probably as big around as a pencil lead or a little bigger, you know, pretty good size stem,
right?
As well. And so the average that I get, even though they say I get a quarter of a pound, you have to deduct half a pound a month. You have to deduct a minimum of 20% for loss to both leakage. It comes rolled, so that leaks into the can. You know, you lose part of that. It sticks to the styrofoam and stuff. Seeds and stems, which have weight. As I said, the seeds are very light because they're very dried. But they're still there. And the paper and the glue. By the time you take all that out, I probably lose 20% of it. And I still do very well every month. You know, I have enough every month.
I think that's right. Richard, do you have another question for us?
Well, yeah, a couple of ones. One immediately comes to mind is, does anybody know if those seeds are fertile or not? But going beyond that, I would like George, perhaps, to just tell the listening audience, and I'll let you go and let them tell about the long-range study they did on four of the patients and how that all worked out in terms of how it helped or hurt or what they found out about them smoking this, what would be considered today a pretty poor grade marijuana, when obviously patients deserve a better grade. And that would really be it. I'll let you go and let George talk about it.
Hey, well, Richard, before you go, let me just say hello. It's good to hear from you.
Well, we listen every time. I had good questions for George. I was waiting for him.
See you sometime, George. Richard.
Okay, good night.
Well, good night, Richard. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Yeah, George, did you have another comment about Richard's statement there? You know, the...
that he just mentioned was the chronic cannabis use, excuse me, in the Compassionate Investigational New Drug Program. And it's an examination of benefits and adverse effects of legal cannabis patients. So, and who get this clinical cannabis that they're always talking about. That's all we get. That's what we smoke. And I would like to say, I know that there are strains out there that are much more effective for me. I can smoke much less. I would like to do that. I'm one of the people you'll meet that says smoke more. God, I would only want to smoke less. I smoke a lot every day, 7 days a week. And that's, you know, I just don't like to do it. It's just too much. If I could do it with less, I would be happy. Now, the study, I believe you can get it by going to cannabis, Patients Out of Times site on the internet. Now, do you know anywhere else we can get a copy of that?
No, I think that's right. Al Byrne, what site is that he runs? Is that it?
It's Patients Out of Times.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Al's the one who tracks all that for us, right?
Right.
George, let me ask you this. You were at the Portland conference, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Tell us a little bit about that. And the reason I'm asking that is Al would like to have the next conference in the Texas Medical Center. And just yesterday I was down talking to some people in the Texas Medical Center, and it's sort of an appealing idea. I I wish I had attended one of those meetings before.
Yes, I wish you had too. You would have really enjoyed it. I will tell you about it. It is doctors, scientists, government people from all over the world coming together to teach other scientists, doctors, now, including patients, as I don't know how to put us together. One of the things that everybody has a hard time seems doing when they're very independent is cooperating. Patients have never lost their input here or their position. It's always been about the patients, for the patients, with the patients. But on top of that, it is people such as yourself. I would like to give one in Texas, too. And in fact, I've talked, we're discussing right now Texas or Minnesota. I can tell you how much it costs us to put one of these on and bring everybody to the meeting. And it's a 3-day meeting.
Yeah.
And it's everybody that you can imagine coming in. And of course, the venue changes every time we are able to change. There's so many investigators out there. So, the evening of Thursday we had a reception. So that was where pretty much just everybody met. But it was, it was movement disorders, AIDS patients, nutritional benefits, diseases and pests for growing. I mean, we went not only into the medical, but how to prepare it. Oregon and Ohio clinical case studies. I mean, do you want the names? Would you folks like to hear the names of some of the people that were there? I mean, they're names that we'd all recognize. And they go all the way down to the club owners, the very people that Clay was talking about, the people that are starting and running clubs by the rules and making headway. So we had a huge medical agenda, Al. The concept of this conference, educational conference series, which it is a series now, includes us moving it, having it somewhere else on a biannual basis, and we're discussing now on a 1-year basis. So.
Yeah, I hadn't realized, George, you're obviously on the board of directors.
Patients Out of Time was a little thing that I did in 92, and then as we got together, I met Al and Mary Lynn. I met Al and Mary Lynn were the first ones to, Mathery, and Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathery were the first ones to approach me. And eventually, the Patients Out of Time, we had coined the term, and it makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's very good. I didn't realize that you had actually had that much to do with starting it, George. You and I will have to get together and talk about this in more detail.
Yeah, I would like to, because I would sure like to have one here, and I think we could probably do it.
It'd be good for us, actually.
And it's a great location.
Yeah.
Well, it'll put all your folks right back into those senators' offices, because that's another of the list of people who like to attend.
We've had governors. That's really what I was thinking, actually. It'd be wonderful, even if we could have it next year instead of...
It would take us a year from the day you start. It takes a year.
It's quite a bit to do it. I'm sure that's right.
There's still time, yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll think about 2004.
Yeah, you guess Texas is a place. It's a big place. Lots of people in, lots of trouble. I mean, with the drug problem. I don't mean an arrest, although that's a problem in its own.
Yeah.
There isn't even a difference here. I mean, we're looking at Zeal's case now. Medical use was denied. He can't even use that for defense.
Yep.
Now, where do we have precedent that's happened before? That had precedent, or we have to get around that somehow. There's cases that have been accepted medical defense in Texas.
Well, yeah. They accepted it at that trial, too, but somehow it's been negated as... I don't really understand the details of that yet.
No, I'm not smart enough to even try. I want you to know, I'd sure like to... The way the conference works... Well, I can give you a one-paragraph...
you and I can talk about that some later time.
Okay, that's fine, Al.
I'm interested in getting together with you on that.
You're right, George. We're running out of time
at
this point. I want to thank you for staying up so late with us. I'm sorry, Professor Duncan couldn't make it tonight. We'll have to invite him back at another time. Al, thank you. I appreciate you spending the time with us. We're going to take a little break, and I'm going to come back with some closing comments.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of DrugSense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's mapinc.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed.